Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today this is a very special podcast that has been, I'm thrilled to say, our friend Hannah Salah in Gaza, who listeners know was a regular contributor to the podcast, told me this was something we needed to cover and put me in touch with Yusuf. So this is a phenomenal book called A Shared Struggle, Stories of Palestine and Irish Hunger Strikers. And I have to confess, I wasn't really that aware of it. I'd known of something, but then I have been reading it now over the last few nights, and it's very, very striking. Before I introduce the guests, I just want to share with you a little bit of an insight into one of the poems in it. This is not the end we want, not now, not ever. Our gatherings have become graves. Their living victims are jailers, whores, our enemy, bitter and cowards. They bare us their teeth, and their poison is bile, is venom. How neat and trimly dressed, at times civil in speech, and at times they play their parts. We're not created for this. No man was created for this. Well, I'm joined by two of the people who put this together, and that's Norma Hassam, who is an author, an acclaimed writer, and she tells me she's not, but she is. She's writer of several books, and she is one of the chair of the Viva Palestine in Malaysia, joined by Yusuf M. Jamal, who is a researcher in Middle East studies and based in Istanbul now, and also one of the people who compiled it. And we're joined by two of the main contributors and people who wrote the forewords to it. Danny Morrison, who listeners are familiar with Danny in an Irish context as a former provisional IRA member, active member of the chairman of the FELA, the ultra successful FELA now, Danny, it has to be said, and also one of the people who helped found the Bobby Sands Foundation. And we are joined by Asad Abu Shark, who is a Palestinian Irish academic whose family were ethnically cleansed from their homeland in Palestine. So it is a great pleasure to be joined by all of you. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I want to go to Norma first, if that's okay. Norma, if you could, if you don't mind, listeners will, you know, we'll have the link to where they can get the book, where they can see the book. But when this project came, the idea of solidarity between a shared struggle around hunger strikes, how did you begin to approach it, and what did it mean to you?
Well, in 2011, I had started a library in Gaza. And one of the directors of the center had sent me these interviews, which were conducted by young Palestinian journalists, and they were interviewing former prisoners. And from there, they asked whether I could try to get these stories published, because I think the aspect of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli prisons was something quite unfamiliar with the rest of the world in those days, in 2012. So that's how I actually got started. And I don't have a background in writing or anything, but I realized that I was probably the only person who would want to help them, because they had tried, and people were not very interested in the stories, because, you know, you don't see prisoners. It's not a visual thing. So it's something out of sight of mind, and I think the Israelis would like it that way. So when I read the stories, I was, you know, just so shocked, actually, that this was happening. And the stories told a very human aspect of, you know, prisoners. And you realize that these are political prisoners. They're not like criminals. And there was a story here how everyone was deprived of a lot of their freedom just because they were fighting for the freedom of their land.
We've had a great year this year. We've had some fabulous guests on, and the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes, you really wouldn't believe the amount. I mean, I don't. Tony does a huge amount of that work, but there is a huge amount of work goes into getting these podcasts ready to put out. And then there's a huge cost once you do put them out. And we want everybody to get this. So what we're looking for is more patrons. We're always looking for more patrons. Make 2022 the year you become a Tortoise Shack patron. It's very easy to do. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And for that, you get a lot of extras too. You get material that doesn't ever go out public. That's a lot of me and Tony ranting, which seems to go down very well. But we also have special guests who never go out public, and we have conversations that aren't yet ready for the public at large. So yeah, we love doing this. We love your support. So it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and have a great 2022.
So anyway, when I did the first book, Yusuf was the translator, and we were quite surprised at the reception worldwide, actually, of that first book. It was published in 2013. And then I was approached by a publisher in the UK who wanted to publish it there. And it was also published in Lebanon and in France as well. You know, people who were interested in the Palestine struggle approached
you to publish it. But you'd written the prison diaries with the stories that you'd gotten, and Yusuf, you had helped translate these
stories. Yeah. Yes. So I put it all together in a book.
And again, I'd highly recommend that as well, by the way, because I've only just downloaded it yesterday. But Yusuf, you as the translator, then it came. You spoke to me briefly, and you were telling me about, as again, I'd read one of your pieces that you'd written about yourself, about the olive trees and the connections to the land and what it meant. And when you put that in the context of prisoners doing, ultimately being, having to humiliate themselves to humiliate their oppressors, when you're writing those, when you were translating those stories, how did you sort of come upon the idea that there was some sort of crossover between Ireland and Palestine?
Thank you, Tony. So I've been doing translations for the good past 12 years, and I always thought that there is so much literature on Palestinian prisoners, political prisoners in Israeli jails, that is not available in other foreign languages, mainly English. And, you know, these people have, some of them have even written their own stories, that these stories deserve to be told and translated, and many connections with other struggles, you know, in these stories, and many similarities. So this is the idea of, you know, getting the first book, and then we got the second book also. So the first book, The Prisoner's Diaries, and then the Dreaming of Freedom on Palestinian Child Prisoners, that were shocking to many people all over the world that I spoke to. And finally, the most recent book, A Shared Struggle. I thought that in order for this book to be successful, and the connections that people always have when it comes to hunger strike, is the issue of political prisoners and hunger strikers in Ireland, and the many connections and stories and discussions I had with many Irish friends who visited Palestine, and historically the connections between Palestine and Ireland, the PLO and the IRA, and how many political prisoners in Palestine told me that they drew inspiration from Irish hunger strikers and Bobby Sands and the very famous hunger strike of 1981, that we thought that the best way to present the stories of Palestinian political prisoners and hunger strikers is through connecting them with Irish hunger strikers and putting all these stories in one book. So people who read about Palestinian hunger strikers at the same time read about Irish hunger strikers and vice versa. And I reached out to Dr. Asad Abu Sharkh, who put us with Danny Morrison. And we worked together on these stories. And I was in the US, in Connecticut in 2019, and I went to the only monument of Bobby Sands in the US, in Boston, you know, in these cities where a lot of Americans who have Irish heritage, they live in these areas, and people still, you know, have a clear idea the role of Irish diaspora in bringing the plight of Republican hunger strikers to, and, you know, bringing about political pressure. So I realized the importance of doing this, and the role Palestinian diaspora as well could play when it comes to Palestine. So this is the idea of the book, and I still feel that this connection is very strong and relevant today. And the reactions that we got from different people, the book reviews and politicians and figures who wrote reviews for the book speak of this, you know, importance of this connection between Palestine and Ireland.
And Danny, if I can come to you, when they first came to you, could you see the connection clearly between Ireland and Palestine? You're on mute, Danny.
That connection has been there from the very beginning in terms of the interference of Britain in both of our nations and the way they distorted the action of our nations and the whole colonial imperialist nature of both struggles.
Can I just cut in for 1 second, Danny, just to put the colonial aspect is covered in the book, but they also speak about, it's so funny, Danny, that we're at the anniversary of partition, the 100 year anniversary of partition, and you know, the Balfour Declaration of 1917 and ultimately the colonial mindset. I just think it's very important that we frame that, as you said, it's been there from the very beginning, but I'm more keen to get to the point where, you know, how as a tool of fighting oppression, a hunger strike, which is in offense, and the book outlines it so clearly, you actually diminish yourself to humiliate your oppressor. It's really, really powerful, but really, really difficult.
Well, before I come on to that, the further connection is this. About 4 years ago, I was honored to interview Asad Abu Shark, who was a guest at the Bloody Sunday Weekend. And Asad was a spokesperson for the Great March of Return. And of course, as you know, many people have lost their lives, have been slaughtered by Israelis on that weekly demonstration. And we were in Derry, where British paratroopers had shot dead 13 people and wounded 26 other people. It was on a civil rights march, which was protesting against the conditions in which internees were being held. Because remember, the people who died on Bloody Sunday were marching against internment in Long Cash. The civil rights march, that's what they were marching on. So Asad and I struck up a friendship, and he told me that he was involved in research in this book, and that a connection had been lost along the way between one of the prisoners organizations in the north. So I, as secretary of the Bobby Sands Trust, said that I would work on it. I would be honored and glad to work on it. And then later I was in regular contact with Norma and Yusuf as we got the text down, as we did the editing and fine-tuned the manuscript to bring it up to publication. So it's interesting. So it's published by Onishog, which means the lark. And Onishog is a shop on the Falls Road, 5153 Falls Road, next to the famous Bobby Sands mural.
Danny, your line is breaking up, I'm afraid, but I have those details about where it's been published, and I will actually put them on the podcast, I promise you on that, and we'll have the link for that. But I do want to come to Asad Abu Shark, if that's okay. You've written one of the intros as well, and you've... As Danny's outlined, you know about the right to return. But can I ask, as someone who's, you know, now Palestinian Irish, looking at that through the prism of the last couple of years in Ireland, how much closer we seem to be to ending partition, and yet how much more difficult it is in you know, Gaza as the world's largest open air prison. You know, how do we take that? How do we bring the success of what seems to be the success that's happening in Ireland to bear, to put pressure on what's actually still a colonial and apartheid state in Israel?
Thank you very much for the question, and thank all my colleagues. And I would like to say that without the efforts of Danny Morrison, I think this book couldn't have been produced, because I approached many people before him to talk about the book, and seemingly my attempts were not successful. But when I contacted Danny Morrison, he was very enthusiastic, and we started from there, and he has done a fabulous job. Now, as far as you know, there is this struggle is shared, because the Palestinian people and the Irish people were suffering from the same British colonialism, because we're under British colonialism, actually, which is euphemistically called mandate. It's not mandate, it's actually occupation, and you were occupied by the British, and you have been suffering for hundreds of years, and you have been suffering ever since our approaching 1948, because remember, there is this connection. Balfour, who is called in your history Bloody Balfour, because of the massacre which he committed in Cork, is called also in our history Bloody Balfour because it is he who promised our country to the Zionists. You know Balfour Declaration in history.
I do.
And then, then if we, many British colonial leaders who oppressed and repressed and butchered the Irish people, actually, also butchered the Palestinian people, George George Lloyd, Churchill, Balfour, and then even tans, the black and tans, who were also who repressed the Irish people, were sent to Palestine by instruction of Churchill in order also to repress the Palestinian people. So the Palestinian people and the Irish people are in the same boat against the same settler colonial.
But I put it to all of you now, and I don't know who wants to answer this, but I put it to all of you that it's not just the British colonialism, particularly when it relates to Palestine. It's actually American imperialism as well.
Let me tell you, yes, but it started, remember one thing, the Balfour Declaration, even during when they were discussing Balfour Declaration, of course, the Americans at that time supported the Balfour Declaration, not only the British, but the person who issued the Balfour Declaration was British Foreign Minister at that time, Balfour, and he sent it to Zionist Federation, to Rothschild, as probably you know. So the Americans later on took, but we were under a British direct British occupation, and it is the British who facilitated the way for the Zionists to occupy Palestine. Why? Because when we put under British mandate by the League of Nations, our mandate was Category A. Category A means that the British mandate should prepare the Palestinian people for independence. Instead of preparing us for independence, to live free in our own country, they handed over Palestine to the Zionist gangs in 1948, and then they withdraw, and then they gave our country, and they supported, of course, the establishment of the Zionist state of Israel. And after 16 minutes of the proclamation of that state, the Americans extended recognition. That is to say, we are the victim, we have been victimized by British colonialism and American imperialism. You are right in that. But unfortunately, the role which the Americans played in your case, your cause, is quite different because of the influence of the Irish immigrants in America. Of course, you managed to have the Good Friday Agreement. But unfortunately, the Oslo Agreement is totally different from your agreement. Your agreement could end at the end of the day by unifying the North and the South, and you have one island. But unfortunately, the Oslo Agreement doesn't refer to any independence, any right of retail, any right to self-determination, anything of the sort. And we were totally subjected by the Israelis. Although we have many resolutions in the United Nations.
Can I come in there just for a moment, Danny? Because I can see the passion. And the passion that the book has ignited, did you find that revisiting the hunger strikes helped to fortify you going forward to help both in Palestine and to help with the move forward in Ireland?
Well, this is the 40th anniversary of the hunger strike, so we were preparing some time, although COVID restrictions ensured that there were no marches or demonstrations. We were able to do some meetings, and I myself have been involved in editing three books this year about the prison experiences. But I have to say that the deaths of those 10 men in 1981 is never far away. Reminders all the time, the incredible sacrifice. And symbolically, out of Bobby Sands' cell emerged the electoral race of Sinn Féin, which in consecutive opinion polls throughout this year and last year show that Sinn Féin is the largest party in the north and the largest party in the south. So we are in a fortunate position, unlike our Palestinian sisters and brothers, whose persecution and oppression not only remains but intensifies. You know, there's really pretext of facts on the ground, the way they're building houses non-stop on the West Bank. It is a disgrace. To me, it is one of the worst scandals of the 21st century. And I think it needs to be opposed. It's interesting also that the person who was my former cellmate, Pat Sheehan, who was the longest on the hunger strike when it ended in 1981, is now Sinn Féin's spokesperson on the Middle East. And Pat has been out there, has been in Gaza, has been in the West Bank, and he's also a Sinn Féin assembly member for West Belfast. So we are highly conscious of the need. We had solidarity around the world in 1981. The Iranian foreign minister appeared at Bobby Sands' funeral, along with Ramsay Clark, former Attorney General to John F. Kennedy, and Father Daniel Berrigan, who was involved and jailed for his protests at the time of the anti-war movement against Vietnam. So we were lucky in having this solidarity. And I think it's very important, the progressive peoples.
Danny, I need to come in, because it was actually Mary Lou MacDonald gave her speech at the Sinn Féin Ardèche, and within the first minute or 47 seconds, I think she mentioned the Palestinian struggle. She actually referenced, I think, at one stage in on the Florida Doll, our coverage of the recent bombardment of Gaza and situations. And I know that. So absolutely, those connections are there. I accept what you're saying, but I want to focus a little bit more on the book for a moment, if I can, Norma, and the personal stories, because there's a lot of them. And I'm referencing some. We got some of the good stories of I don't know. Do you know the people who were smuggling out semen, sperm, to out of prisons to other people, to, so they could have children in Gaza. The prisoners were doing this. This is the very opposite of that. And before we came on air, Martin shared how triggering it was for him, how difficult it was to read those stories as someone who was just from the perspective of someone who went through chemo, to hear people, how their bodies were failing or their bodies were letting them down. Norma, when you're putting together those stories, it must have an impact just on yourself and Yusuf as people who are collating them and putting them together.
Yeah. I think actually our second book, when we had to deal with child prisoners, that was actually very, very stressful for me as a mother as well. And a lot of these child prisoners were young boys as well, you know, who had lost their childhood. With the hunger strikers, yes, it was painful to read, but I understood, because, you know, what else is left? This is where their body is the weapon. This is the ultimate sacrifice, you know, and you have to respect the people and how far they would go for this. For now, there's nothing else you can do, because governments are against the Palestinians. As you know, recently the UK government has banned Hamas and anyone who supports it as well. You know, it's illegal. So what else is there? So people of conscience, this is what they have and this is what they have to do. You just respect them for going all the way for what
when you read the book, when you say going all the way, it, and Danny, you know this from firsthand, you know, perspective of your friends and your lost friends, that it is absolutely horrendous, and it is the ultimate self-sacrifice in many regards. Asad, if I could come to you, just because I know we're short on time, but I would like to ask you. You mentioned earlier the right to return. You mentioned earlier the struggle, but we've seen this year, whereby when the conflict stopped and the world moved on, and for a few weeks everybody was watching again. But in these stories, this is the written history of a conflict that is still ongoing, as opposed to hopefully on the island of Ireland, a conflict that has been consigned to history. Do you think we have enough momentum to actually, with those personal stories, get people to get engaged 365 days a year as opposed to just 2 weeks when things look particularly bad?
I think, as an Irish saying, it's darkest before the dawn. Is it not an Irish saying?
Very much so.
I feel like the darkest hour is before the day. So I do believe that, you know, just have to hold on. And, you know, time will prove that, you know, the moral, the victor is the one on the who's morally right.
I'd love to get Assad's thoughts on that as well, though, if that's okay. Yeah.
I think the Palestinian the Palestinian struggle will go on and on and on, and I think we have a great hope and inspiration from the support of the Irish people, all sectors of the Irish people. They support the Palestinian people, and that is all the Palestinian people are aware of the support, and the Irish people's support is of paramount importance. Why? Because in recent history, it was the Irish who helped the South African people to get rid of the apartheid regime. And I remind you of a book written by Kader Asmal, who was the chairman of the anti-apartheid movement in Ireland, and I was a member at that time with him. He wrote a book in which he said, our victory against the white regime in South Africa is to a great extent to the support of the Irish people.
Ask you, if a united Ireland is achieved, will that be a big boost for Palestinians?
Of course, that gives a hope for the Palestinian people, and that goes that there is will, there is way. And the Palestinian people, of course, remember, we take lessons, even our hunger strikers, you say, they take the model, that the model of Bobby Sands and his other people and other Irish hunger strikers, and they have been greatly inspired by the struggle of the Irish hunger strikers. And this is why they are going on and they are winning. And that gives them more motives to continue. And that gives more motive to the Palestinian people to continue the struggle and to tell them there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Danny, would you agree with that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the position already is that Sinn Féin put down a motion to recognise the state of Palestine, and the government in Dublin hasn't acted on that, and we believe that being reinforced and passed in the event of a new government, perhaps a coalition government with Mary Lou MacDonald as on Taoiseach, that will encourage others within the European Union of a similar mind to show solidarity and to be emboldened to push for such a motion. I mean, there are EU restrictions on Israeli goods coming out of the occupied territories. But, you know, we need to be much more concentrated here and much more dedicated to the suffering that's going on there and to help the Palestinian people. It is awful what is going on there. The daily humiliations of people on their own land. And I've seen the recent, there are more footage of the stealing of water, the destruction of olive plantations, which have been there, you know, for hundreds of years.
Yusuf wrote about it.
Pardon?
Yusuf wrote a lovely piece about it, didn't you?
Yes, I read that.
Yep. Yeah.
And it was a really lovely piece, and I will put it in the blurb. But you're right, Danny, about the ongoing level of destruction. But I also want to, like there's also cracks of hope when you see, like, Loé Albassani from Gaza to Mars, you know, as an engineer doing it. Like, we've had him on the podcast. My God, he'd light you up with just his enthusiasm and how he has tried to push for change. But I do think that the book itself, while very dark, and it is very dark, is also a challenge to everybody else, you know, for to support and actually be more actively engaged, be more mindful. Yusuf, I want to ask just about finally for me now, and feel free to tell me. But when you wrote that little piece about the olive trees, you're currently in Turkey. It struck me as someone who wants to go home.
Yes, so I think olive trees are like, you know, children for Palestinians, and we treat olive trees with care and respect. You know, the olive tree is one of the symbols that we have that proves our connection to the land. You know, these olive trees, some of which are thousands of years old, that are being uprooted by Israeli settlers, are just another evidence, or is another evidence to this strong connection that Palestinians have to the land. And one way to release our, you know, tension when we are homesick, you know, I have not been back in Gaza for the past 5 years, is to recall these national symbols and celebrations and the olive harvest and how families get together. It brings a lot of good memories where, you know, families would gather and collect olive, you know, olives for, you know, during this season, especially in Gaza where I grew up. And the fact that we had two olive trees planted by my grandfather, and we wanted to uproot them to build our new house, my aunt cried for them. So we do have this strong connection, and you know, families do pay care. We planted more olive trees, of course, after we uprooted them, but still the connection is very strong. And this is how I express my homesickness, and the fact that I cannot practically go home now is by writing about these memories, which are also political. So it's not just like families getting together, because the context is important now. Israeli settlers are uprooting these trees. And ironically, sometimes they uproot trees and bring them and replant them in front of, you know, main entrances of settlements, to prove their own connection to the land, you know, that say that we've been here for a long time. It's very ironic.
And it is it's all about connection to the land, and about a people's connection to the land where they live. Sorry, we have to bring this to a close, because it is something we could stay talking about for hours and hours, and we really could. I'd like to thank Assad, Yosef, Norma, Danny, and of course, Tony. Great questions, Tony. Very well done. And I'd like to thank for coming along today and having this talk with us. And we hope to talk to you all again quite soon in the future.
Lads, the link for the podcast, for the book, is going to be in this. So if you're listening right now, you can take your phone out and look. You can click on it and you'll be able to see where the book is available. I would recommend it. It's a difficult read at parts, but
It's a must read, Tony. It is a must read. It is definitely.
My eyes were drawn to the poetry naturally, as that type of thing appealed to me much more than the visceral aspect of it. But nonetheless, it's so broad, but we should really understand that it is very much a shared struggle. And I'm delighted that we got this opportunity to talk to you all. And I hope to do it again. I really do. Just for listeners' benefits, we will be back on Sunday. We have more things lined up, but please, please, please continue to like, share, let everybody know. Other than that, we really appreciate the time of Assad, Yusuf, Norma, and Danny. It's been terrific. I hope to talk to you all very, very soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and